So I'm going to speak about application of non-commutative residue in Riemannian and CR geometry. So my talk will have four parts. First part about lower dimensional volume in Riemannian geometry. I'm going to explain what I mean by that. Then lower dimensional volume in CR geometry. Third part will be new invariant for CR and contact manifold. And there will be a last part about open problems. So I start with the first part, lower dimensional volume in Riemannian geometry. So I'll ask the following question. So can we define the area of M when N, the dimension of M, is greater than or equal to 3? And more generally, can we define the kf dimensional volume of M for any k between 1 and n minus 1? So So it's possible by using non-commutative geometry, more precisely Kohn's quantized calculus and the non-commutative residue trace of Wojcicki and Gunning. So what happened is that it's an observation of Alan Kohn that can define the area, and I elaborated on this to define the case dimensional volume for any case. So I'm going to start with a non-commutative residue. So it's a trace on the algebra of absolute functional operator on a compact manifold and independently defined by Wojcicki and Gunning. It has a many application and realization. So in particular, it's an essential tool in the framework for the local index formula in non-commutative geometry of Kohn and Moscovici. And so there is an elementary construction in terms of the logarithmic singularity of the kernel near the diagonal, which I'm going to explain. So I start with recalling briefly what are solid differential operators. So they are associated to symbols, and from symbols you get an operator by this formula. So for instance, when p little p is a sum of square, what you get is negative the Laplacian. Okay. And more generally, solid differential operator on a manifold M will be locally of the form P of locally of the form P of XB plus a smoothing operator. So a smoothing operator, it's an operator with a smooth kernel. And so if you look at the Schwarz kernel of absolute differential operator of order M, then it has a singularity near the diagonal, so when y gets closer and closer to x. So there is two parts, one part which is a polar part, and another part which is a logarithmic part. And then we also have a bounded part. And the coefficient of the logarithmic singularity is given in terms of the symbol of degree minus n, so minus the dimension of the manifold. And what you take is the integral over the cosphere. Okay. And the lemma is that this coefficient makes sense globally on M as a density, which is functorial with respect to diffeomorphism. Okay. So if you like, if you don't like density, you may assume that the variety is orientable. So you cannot define CP of X globally, but what you can define is CP of X dx. 1 wedge axn. So this makes sense globally. Okay. But we denote both the function and the density with the same notation. Okay, so we have a density, and the advantage of the density is that you can integrate it. Okay. And the integration of the density gives the non-commutative residue. So we have following property of non-commutative residue. So it's locality, so it means vanishes for operator for order less than negative n. It's invariant by diffeomorphism. So these two conditions follow from definition. And second important property, it's because this is a trace. So what happened is that when I look at the differential operator, so you have a negative n here. Okay, so this is So this is C. Okay. So So when the real part of the operator is less than negative n, so it's in this reactive plane here. So this is a trace class. And you can get an analytic extension of this to a polyferential operator whose order is not an integer. And on the differential operator of integer order, what we have is that the residue. And you can show that when you look at behavior of the regularized stress here, near the differential operator of integer order, you have a simple ball singularities whose residue is precisely given by the non-commutative residue. Okay. And from this, you can easily deduce that it's a trace. So you have other property of non-commutative residue proved by Mariusz Wojcicki, is that in fact this is essentially the unique trace, and so
the dimension is greater than one.
Yes. And if the manifold is connected, then. And so the non-commutative residue of any polyferential projection is zero. So that's really important for the third part. So, second tool, it's a quantized calculus. So, if you like, it's a calculus in non-commutative geometric setting. Okay, so I call it briefly. So, complex variable, real variable correspond to operator and self-adjoint operator. Infinitesimal variable correspond to compact operator. And the order of an infinitesimal operator is given by the growth of, of the characteristic value, which are also called by some author singular values. And the substitute for the integral is provided by the Dixmit trace. So I'm not going to define precisely the Dixmit trace, because for the differential operator we'll get an equivalent definition in the next slide. But suffices to say that if T is a positive compact operator satisfying this, okay, so such that when you divide up the partial sum by log n, and you have a limit L, then the Dixmit trace of T is equal to L. Okay. So in general, so if T is an infinitesimal of order 1, okay, these terms here will be bounded, okay, and this Dixmit trace is obtained by taking a limit point of this. So there are various possible various ways, there are various ways of taking a limit point. Okay, so you have in fact several Dixmit traces, but when the value of the Dixmit trace is independent of the process, we say that the operator is measurable. Okay. And so what happened now is for pseudo-differential operator. So if you consider a pseudo-differential operator of negative order n, then P is an infinitesimal of order absolute value of M over N. Okay, so recall here that N is the dimension. And if the order is precisely equal to negative N, then so P is measurable for the Dixmit trace, and the Dixmit trace of P is equal to 1 over N, the non-commutative residue of P. Okay. So a consequence is that we can integrate any pseudo-differential operator, even if it is not an infinitesimal of order less than or equal to 1, just by letting Dixmit trace of P to be 1 over N non-commutative residue of P. Okay? So using non-commutative geometry, we can integrate infinitesimal which are infinitesimal of order strictly greater than 1. Okay. So now I explain how we can define lower dimensional volume. So I will do when dimension is even, and I will first treat the case when the manifold is P. Okay. So in this case, we have a Dirac operator on M. Okay, so I recall you that the non-commutative residue is given by the integral over the cosphere of the symbol of degree negative N. So the principle, so in So for D to the negative n, the symbol of the degree negative n is in fact the principal symbol, and so in this case given by the metric to the power for negative n. So from this, you can compute that the coefficient of logarithmic singularity density here is in fact proportional to the volume form. And so when you take the Dix-Mitchell, okay, so Dix-Mitchell of f d to the negative n is given by 1 over n non-cumulative residue of f d to the negative n. And so from this, you get the integral, you recover the integral of f. And so you show that this negative n allows us to recover the Riemannian volume form. Okay. Okay, so now we'd like to define a lower dimensional volume. So what we'd like to get is a length element. Okay. So the idea of Alain was first come from physics, like from quantum field theory. So he explained this in his talk, is that D inverse, okay, correspond to a free propagator from fermion, and so he has the dimension of length. Okay. So another approach from mathematical size is to try to get, if you like, n fruit of the Riemannian volume form. Okay. So it's difficult to take n fruit of volume form here, but there's no problem to take the nth root of an operator. Okay. So as a non-cumulative length element, we take ds, so ds to be cn times d to negative 1, where cn is equal to that, and its constant is it's adjusted so that the Dix-Mitchell of ds to vn is equal to the volume of it. And once you have a length element, you can define kth dimensional volume as the Dix-Mitchell of the non-cumulative integral, if you like, of dsk. In particular, the area of M is just the Dix-Mitchell of ds square. That's the way that Alain defines the area. So this gives an operator theoretic formulation of the Riemannian volume, but we like to have it in a purely differential. So purely differentiable way. Okay. And the result is the following. So I put my name here, but a lot of credit has to be given to Peter Glickey. Following reason is that so non-cumulative residue can be related to coefficient of the heat kicker asymptotics, and there is a complete analysis of the coefficient of the heat kicker asymptotic for the square of the Dirac operator by Peter Glickey. So from this, you deduce that when k is odd, the k differential volume vanishes, and when k is even, so it's given by a formula like this. So you have a constant here which depends on n and k, so it's given by that. Okay, and this is the integral of gamma n minus k. So gamma n minus k is a local Riemannian variant. That is, it's given in terms of complete contraction of the covariant derivative of the curvature tensor. And so furthermore, you can prove that in fact it depends only on n minus k. Okay. So I explain this. So complete contraction, for instance, if you take the curvature, it's a four-fold tensor. If you contract one times with the metric, you get the Ricci tensor, so rho of x here. And if you contract one more time, you get the scalar curvature kappa here. So when n minus k is equal to 0, you have 1. So this is recover the volume form. When n minus k is equal to 2, you get the scalar curvature. Okay. And when n minus k is equal to 4, what you get is the square of the scalar curvature, the norm square of the Ricci tensor, and the norm square of the curvature tensor. Okay. Okay, so here this is the basis for the local Riemannian invariant, but there is one more term, which is the Laplacian of the scalar curvature, but its integral vanishes, so you can get rid of it in the formula. Okay. Okay, so I give examples. Right. So first, so the result first observed by code is that the area of M, so when M is the dimension of M is equal to four, sorry. The area of M is equal to negative 1 over so 96 pi square root of 2 of the integral of scalar curvature. And when dimension of M is equal to 6, then you get this formula, okay? So with a nice coefficient in front of the integral. Okay. So the main work here is only to look at the tables in the book of Decay and compute the constant. Okay. And okay, so so I'll go back to this. So now I want to stress out that the left-hand side here does not make any reference to the spin structure. So, as definition of k-dimensional volume when the manifold is not spin, you take the left-hand side of the previous formula. Okay. So when k is odd, this is zero, and when k is even, this is so nu nk integral of gamma nk with respect to the Riemannian volume form. Okay. And so here we have a definition which is purely differential geometric, and does not make any reference to non-commutative geometry. So it's an example of, if you like, of problem which whose solution does not. Which solution does not require any non-commutative geometry, but the solution does make use of non-commutative geometry. So I want to make some additional remarks. When you look at this matrix of ds to n negative 2, what you get is something like some negative constant times the integral of the scalar curvature, and this is a spectral interpretation of the Einstein-Hilbert action of gravity that Alain spoke in his talk yesterday. And you also have a connection with spectral symmetry. So, we don't like this. So, when you look at zeta function, so the stress of d to the negative s, in order to define it, you have to make the choice of a spectral cutting, either in the upper half plane or in the lower half plane. Okay. So you have two possibilities. And it was an idea of, if you like, people who first look at spectral asymmetry in terms of eta invariant and eta function, introduced by Attila Pavlidis-Singer. And it was an idea of Shubin and Fujitsky. To look in spectral asymmetry in terms of difference of two zeta functions. Okay. So there are a formula by Wojcicki for when D is any pseudo-differential elliptic self-adjoint elliptic pseudo-differential operator. Well, in fact, you don't need to have self-adjointness if you change the spectral cutting. Okay, but in case of a differential operator, at least so first order differential operator, you can simplify the formula. And when you see that, so 1 over pi, so spectral asymmetry, if you like, at k, is equal, you can prove that it is equal to the non-commutative residue of d to the negative k. And so you see that the spectral asymmetry here at k is proportional to the kth dimensional of volume. So you just remark. So now I go to the part 2, which is about lower dimensional volume in CR geometry. Alors, so I think Henri spoke about CR a bit in his talk. So CR stands for Cauchy and Riemann. So I'm going to explain what is a CR manifold. So I start with one example. So you take D to be a bounded domain in CM plus 1. And you let M be the boundary of D. Okay, so you assume the boundary to be smooth. So we like, okay, so M as a real manifold, as dimension 2M plus 1, so you cannot have a complex structure. Okay. So nevertheless, you can have one on some hyperplane. So we let J0 be the complex structure of CM plus 1, Okay, so J0 is just the differentiable of the multiplication by I, and you let H be the intersection of Tm and J0 Tm, and you get a complex structure on H by restricting J0 to H. Okay, and the data of H and G, H and J, define a CR structure on M. Okay, so that's an example of CR structure. And in general, so consider a CR structure on an orientable manifold is given by the data of a hyperplane subbundle H of Tm and of a complex structure on H. So you have many examples of CR structure and CR manifold. So an easy extension of the previous example is real hyper surfaces on complex manifolds. We also have a natural CR structure on Heisenberg group. So you want, okay, and also you have CR structure at boundaries of asymptotically complex hyperbolic manifolds. So that's, these are manifolds defined by Melrose and Lechstein. You also have CR structure which appear as circle bundle over complex manifolds. So Henri also presented the CR structure in this talk. And one thing which is interesting about CR is that if you have so at least when it's strictly pseudo convex, so I put like this, you can associate to M a bundle which is called the Fefferman bundle. Okay, so which is a circle bundle, and it carries a natural Lorentzian structure. So if you like, studying CR, one motivation for studying CR manifold from point of view of non-commutative geometry is that you can expect to deduce from a geometric study of CR manifold a geometric study for Fefferman Lorentzian spaces. So it will allow us to get an example of Lorentzian spaces studied from point of view of non-commutative geometry. Okay. So okay, so when you have a boundary of a domain, you have a notion of pseudo-convexity in terms of Hessian of a defining function. And you can define notion of pseudo-convexity for abstract CR manifold as follows. So here I assume CR manifold to be orientable. So as a consequence, you always have one form theta which annihilates H. Okay, then so you pick up one form like that. You let T10 be the kernel of J minus I. So J is the complex structure of H, and you define a Levy form, which is the Hermitian form on T10. Okay, so the value of Levy form is L theta. Its value at ZW is equal to negative I d theta, Z W bar. Okay, so here it's the conjugate of W. I don't know if you can see. And we say that M is strictly pseudo-convex, so in short, S psi C, when you can choose theta, so that L theta is positive definite. Okay. So, if M is strictly pseudo-convex, then you have a differential geometric apparatus. So first, okay, so theta is a contact form. By this, I mean that d theta restricted to H is non-degenerate. And, the datum of absolute, okay. So the datum of theta, so such that L theta is positive definite, defines what is called a pseudo-Hermitian structure, and associated to this datum, okay, you get the Levy metric, which is defined like that, okay, on Tm, and so that on T10 is just just L theta, and also associated to theta. You have a canonical connection, it's called Tanaka-Obster connection. Okay. So these are a substitute for the Riemannian metric and the Levi-Civita connection. Okay, so, and also to explain a pseudo-differential calculus adapted to CR manifold. So it was defined by, Henri spoke about it briefly in his talk. Okay, so it's defined in general for Heisenberg manifold. Okay, so CR manifold is given by hyperplane bundle H and a complex structure J on H. So if you forget about the complex structure, you get what is called Heisenberg manifold. So it's just given by M and a distinguished hyperplane subbundle H of Tm. Okay. And it will be also useful for the talk to define what's called the Heisenberg diffeomorphism. So it's just the diffeomorphism between Heisenberg manifold preserving the Heisenberg structure. Okay, so that we have that. Okay. Now, for Heisenberg manifold, there is a new new notion of the tangent space, which is non-commutative. And it is defined as follows. So first, you have an intrinsic Lewy form. So what happens is that, okay, if you take two sections, x prime and y prime of H, you look at their commutator, the value of their commutator at a point x, and you look at it modulo H. And what happens is that this depends only on the value of x prime and y prime at the point. Okay. So as a consequence, you see that you can define two forms from H cross H to the normal bundle Tm over H by using the commutators of vector fields modulo H. Okay. So from this Lewy form, you can define a tangent Lie group bundle, which is as a set, it's just Tm over H plus H. Okay. And it has a structure of bundle of Lie group with product given by this. Okay. So here, x0 and y0 are section of Tm over H, and x prime and y prime are section of H. So it ressembles, it looks similar to the product for the Heisenberg group. Okay. And in addition to the group, you have a dilation, which is given by this. So it has weight 2 on the normal bundle, and it has weight 1 on the horizontal bundle. Okay. And now, why Heisenberg manifold are called Heisenberg manifold? It's because of this fact. So if the rank of the Lewy form at point x is equal to 2m, then gx of m is isomorphic, so as Lie group. To the Heisenberg group of dimension 2m plus 1 cross Abelian group of dimension d minus 2m. Okay, here, d is the dimension of the manifold minus 1. So, in particular, manifold will be contact if the Heisenberg manifold will be contact if only if the rank at chaque edge point is equal to the dimension. And in this case, the tangent Lie group bundle will be a fiber bundle over the Heisenberg group. Okay, and on top of that, so you can construct a tangent group weight. So it's a differential group weight which encodes, if you like, so it's the analog of Kohn's tangent group weight for manifold. And it encodes the smooth deformation of M cross M to G. So I will go back to this part four. So in particular, Kohn gave a proof of that, of the full TS singular index theorem using tangent group weight, and you may expect to have something similar by using tangent group weight for Heisenberg manifold, and there are also result in this direction by von Erp. Okay. Define the Heisenberg, the operator in the Heisenberg calculus. So to simplify things, I will take a compact Heisenberg manifold, and the dimension will be M, and it will be convenient to write it as D plus 1. So, to define symbols, we need a specific type of Heisenberg chart, of local chart. So these are called Heisenberg chart. It consists in a local chart plus a frame x0, x1, xd of TU, so that x1, x2, xd are in H. Okay. The Heisenberg symbols are defined here. So, definition is similar to the definition of a classical symbol, except that we use a different notion of homogeneity. So homogeneity is anisotropic, in the sense that for a variable xc1, xc2, xcd, this is we have we multiply by t, but for the transverse variable xc0, we multiply by t squared. Okay, so using Heisenberg symbol, we can define ψ0, so that is the operator in the Heisenberg calculus. So so you pick up a symbol, so little p, okay, and you define an operator by this formula. So the formula is similar to that for a classical absolute differential operator, except that here you plug in, instead of having xc, here you plug in a of x xc, where a of x is a matrix of the coefficient of the vector fields 1 over I xj. Okay. So if you like, the reason why you do that is that you like to have Lorentz series in the vector fields x0, x1, xd. So for instance, when p, the symbol is the sum of square, xc1 square plus xc2 square plus xd square, okay, plus alpha x0, the operator that we get using this formula is this, so it's called a sub-Laplacian. So it's negative x1 square plus xd square minus I alpha x0. Okay. And ψ0 for the M, so it's just a continuous operator, which is locally of the form. Quantification of Heisenberg symbol here plus a smoothing operator. Okay. So I define a non-classical residue for classical absolute differential operator using logarithmic singularity. So you also have a logarithmic singularity for go back. A logarithmic singularity for ψ0. So you have technical definition here. But what is important is that the coefficient of the logarithmic singularity here depends only on the symbol of degree negative m plus 1. So it's not like so for classical absolute differential operator, the coefficient of the logarithmic singularity depends only on the symbol of degree negative m. But here it's negative m plus 1, that is negative dimension of m plus 1. Okay. And you can also prove that this defines density, but in this case it's not functorial with respect to any diffeomorphism, but only with respect to Heisenberg diffeomorphism. Okay, so we can define a non-commutative residue. Okay, you take the integral of the density Cp of x, and you have same property as for the classical non-commutative residue. So locality. So non-commutative residue vanishes if the order of p is less than negative m plus 1, invariance by the Heisenberg diffeomorphism, and you have a trace. And again, you can show that when the manifold is connected, this is essentially the unique trace. Okay. Okay. And okay, we also have a quantized calculus. So we have the analog of the theorem of Alain. So if P is a ψ0 of order M, with M negative, then P is an infinitesimal of order absolute value of M over N plus 1. And if the order is equal to negative N plus 1, then you have Dixmier trace of P is equal to 1 over N plus 1 negative residue of P. So again, we can this allows us to integrate any ψ0, even if it's not an infinitesimal of order 1. Okay, so now I skipped one slide I wanted to mention, but now it's the right place to put it. So I like to define, so it's one substitute for the Laplacian. Okay, so you can consider the exterior differential and it induces a horizontal differential. So from function of M on this section of the dual of H, and if you pick up, if you use the metric on H, then you can define a corresponding Laplacian, so which is noted delta B, and it's called the horizontal sub-Laplacian. It was introduced by Jack Lee, Greenleaf, and Tanaka. And locally, if you look at it, it's a sum of square. Locally, I mean, consider Heisenberg chart with a frame, x0, x1, xd, where x1, x2, xd are horizontal vector fields. And then delta B will be like negative x1 square plus x2 square plus xd square modulo lower order term. So lower order term, these are lower order term sense of Heisenberg calculus. And then you can prove that delta B will admit the parametric Heisenberg calculus if only if you have the Hermander condition here. So it means that H plus all the Lie brackets formed by vector fields of H span T. So in terms of the Lie form, it only means that the Lie form is never vanishing. So it's a relatively weak condition. And so this is Hermander condition, because Hermander gave a general condition for sum of vector field to be hypolytic. Okay, but in case of Heisenberg manifold, the condition reduces exactly to that. So you can also consider the differential on form, but the condition here is different. Okay? So the hypolyticity of delta B will depend on the degree of the form. Okay, so now I go to lower dimensional volumes, ici en géométrie. So I consider a strictly pseudo-convex here manifold of dimension 2m plus 1. I fix a pseudo-Hermitian contact form on M. So I recall you that this gives us a Lie-metric and a Tanaka-Hopster connection. And I look at, I would like to define a length element, and I will use the horizontal sub-Laplacian to do that. So, So when you take the Dix matrix of F to the Dix matrix of F of delta B to the negative M plus 1, you get some constant BL that you can so you have an explicit formula for it, but I'm not going to give it here. So it's positive constant times F of X times, so what is the pseudo-Hermitian volume form, which is d theta n wedge of theta. Okay. So it corresponds essentially up to a factor on one factor of length to the volume form of the Lie metric coming from theta. Okay. So again, delta B is negative m plus 1 allows us to recover the volume form here. Okay. And we define the length element to be 1 over so it's some constant times one over 2m plus 1 of delta b to the negative m plus 1, which is just delta b to the negative 1/2. Okay, so the S is Cm delta B to negative 1/2, where Cm is equal to that. Okay. So, with a ninth element, we define the kf dimensional volume as before. Okay, so here, so this is the Dix matrix of DS, okay? And here, here we get dimensional volume up to 2m plus 2. So the dimension here is of the manifold is 2m plus 1, but you have an extra dimension on the normal bundle, okay? And also this corresponds to the critical dimension when you consider a spectral triple with Heisenberg with form with PCHDOs of order one.
Is there a canonical one? Word
one? No, you take okay, and that so it's okay. So this is a basic definition of spectral triple. So it's not something for which the Collindex formula will. Well, I mean, if you take Fredel module, it would be 2m plus 2 summable.
No, but in the case of strongly pseudo convex, what is the order one operator you are taking? The analog of Dirac.
So I'll speak about that at the end of it. Okay.
Do you understand correctly that this can be expressed in terms of asymptotical heat equation, in terms of CD coefficients?
Yeah. Yeah, so residue correspond to sure. Kernel coefficient.
There's a coefficient in the asymptotic.
So
the residue is from a zeta function, so by Mehling transform, you get the heat.
The way I compute the residue is by using it kernel asymptotics. So in fact you can express them in terms of it kernel asymptotics if you like. So you can also compute them in more differential geometric way. So 1k is odd, the volume vanishes, and 1k is even. So it should be the integral of what's called a pseudo-Hermitian invariant, which in this case is given by a universal polynomial in complete contraction of the curvature and torsion tensor of the Tanaka-Hopster connection. Okay, so Tanaka-Hopster connection does have a torsion, so you have to take it into account when you define, when you want to get the pseudo-Hermitian invariant. Mm-hmm. So the weight corresponds to the homogeneity here when you scale so the pseudo-Hermitian contact form. By lambda square. Okay. Okay. So, one example. So one dimension of M is equal to 3. So then you can explicitly compute the gamma MK. Okay. In this case, what you get is that the area, so which is a volume dimension 2, is equal to 1 over 32 square root of 2 of the integral of the Tanaka-Hopster scalar curvature, which is denoted R1. In particular, for the circle seen as hypersurface in C2, with this pseudo-Hermitian contact form, which is standard contact form on S3, you get that the area of S3 is equal to pi square over hect square root of 2. Okay, additional remarks. What you can prove is that the x-matrix of ds to the 2m is proportional to the integral of the Tanaka-Hopster scalar curvature. So it yields spectral interpretation of Steinberg action in CR geometry. And this might lead us to a spectral interpretation of the Steinberg action in Lorentzian geometry, in special case of Fermat Lorentzian space. So there's still an issue about the sign here. So maybe delta B is maybe not the right operator to get the spectral interpretation with the right sign. But Okay, but this is a good first approximation. So now I would like to explain how we can use non-creative residue to get new invariant for CR and compact manifold. So one motivation comes from an invariant found by Hirachi, who was my host at Tokyo University. In fact, you should say the University of Tokyo. So you take a strictly pseudo convex domain, D. Okay, we define a function rho. Actually, you don't need. Okay. Theta absolute Hermitian contact form on del D. I consider a Zego projection. So Zego projection, this is so with theta, you get a scalar product, a inner product on L2 of del D. And you consider the orthogonal projection onto boundary values of holomorphic function. Okay. So this is Zego projection. So if you like, if you take Zego projection for the circle, S1, S will be just see the Cauchy formula. Okay. Yeah. So maybe it's up to a sign. Yeah. And so this operator, the Zego projection, has a reproducing kernel, so Schwarz kernel. Okay. So here it should be. Okay. Well, it should not be dw, but d theta n. Okay, bon. Okay, so I'm sorry, there's a typo. So dw should be read d theta n or what theta. So we have a reproducing kernel, and people look in the mid-70s look at the asymptotic expansion of this kernel near the diagonal, and you have following asymptotics due to Fermat and Boutet-Monvel. So in fact, Fermat did it for the first for the Berman kernel, and then Boutet-Monvel and Sechtrand did it for the Zego kernel and the Berman kernel. In fact, two asymptotics are resolved in. So what happened is that you have two parts. So it's different. We have two parts. We have a polar part here, which is like rho to the m plus 1. So rho of zw is an extension of the defining function. Okay. In particular, it vanishes near the diagonal. Okay. So you have polar part here, and you have logarithmic part. Okay. So what did Hirachi? He looked at the trace of psi theta. Okay, so phi theta and psi theta are smooth functions. In fact, they are analytic with respect to z, and anti-analytic with respect to W. Okay. So he looked at the trace of psi theta, and he integrated it with respect to d theta and wet theta. Okay. So you can show that this guy here defined density, okay, and you can integrate it. And the theorem of Hirachi. Okay, so you wrote the paper in 2003, but he announced the result at least 10 years before. Is that L theta is a global CR invariant, and also invariant under deformation of the domain. So this result, in fact, has been extended to the contact setting by Boutet-Monvel. So in a contact setting, you don't have a CR structure, but you still can define a generalized Zego projection. And we have an asymptotic near the diagonal similar to that I explained in the previous slide. But here you have logarithmic singularity, and you can also define an invariant. So Boutet-Monvel did that, and afterwards, he proved that, in fact, the invariant is zero. So both the invariant of Boutet-Monvel and Hirachi are zero. But, yeah. And the question, before Boutet proved the vanishing result, Fermat asked the following question. Are there other operators such that the logarithmic singularity of the kernel give rise to CR and contact invariant? So even so, you have a vanishing of Boutet-Monvel. Question of Fermat remains valid. So I would like to draw a motivation in terms of what's called a Fisherman's program. So we have two parts. So we have an analytic task, which is to give a precise description of the singular behavior of the Berman and the Zeko kernel. So Berman kernel, this is analog of the Zeko kernel, but for the domain. And geometric task is to give a complete description of all local scalar geometric serial invariant of a given weight W. So by this I mean so the Hermitian invariant. So I means so these are function you can write as so complete contraction of the curvature and torsion tensor of the Tanaka-Epstein connection, and which satisfy this conformal condition. Okay. So connection between the two is that when you look at the at least in the case of Berman kernel, you can express this in terms of CR invariant, okay? And you like to have something which is similar to Gilkey's result on the kernel asymptotics. That is to have for each weight to have a basis of CR invariant and show that every CR invariant can be write as a linear combination of this of the term of this basis. So since then, the program has evolved to include other geometries, like conformal geometry, and also to involve global invariants. So in particular, you have a so-called desert swimmer conjecture in a conformal geometry, which predicts what are the global CR conformal invariants. And it has been partially proved by a student of Fisherman last year. Okay. So get to explain answer to Fisherman's question. So the first observation is that in fact the Zeko first part is not an observation of mine. Is that the Zeko projection is a PCHDO, and second the logarithmic singularity, so as a PCHDO, corresponds to the logarithmic singularity as defined so by Boutet-Monvel and Sostrom. Okay. So CS theta, so that is a coefficient of logarithmic singularity as I defined for PHDO, is equal to negative 2 psi theta ZZ, which is the logarithmic singularity in the synthetic for the Zeko projection by Boutet-Monvel and Sostrom. And so from that, you deduce that the invariant of hierarchy is equal to negative 1 half, the non-commutative residue of S theta. Okay. So what I did is to then invariants as non-commutative residue of several geometric PCHDO projections. Okay. The operator can be divided into three families. So the first family comes from the Di-Barbi complex of Conroy-Si and Sierre manifold. So Henri spoke a bit about the Di-Barbi in his talk. So this is the analog of the Di-Barbi complex for Sierre manifold. You have over invariant coming from a generalized Zeko projection of Epstein-Merrows on contact manifold, and also a variant coming from the contact complex of Riemann on contact manifold. And so what's important here? So we know that the hierarchy Boutet-Monvel invariant is zero, but something which is important in view of Fisherman program. So non-creative residue are the integral of some density. Okay, so pi is a projection, actually. But what's important too is to be able to compute in local coordinate c pi of x to have an information, geometric information about that. Because c pi of x corresponds to the coefficient of the logarithmic singularity of the geometric projection of pi. Okay. And so, in fact, you also get a framework for which the invariant. By this, I mean, so either raise of pi or CP of pi are more computable. How many time do you have? Just 5 minutes? Okay. I will I will skip. Okay, so so I won't give this construction. I will not give details of the technical construction. Okay, and I will go. So okay, but if you go to my paper on the archive, this will be explained. Okay. And I will go to directly to the fourth part. Yeah, maybe I can mention that. So, in fact, the proof used two facts. The first is the invariance by Heisenberg diffeomorphism of the non-creative residue for Heisenberg calculus. So I mentioned it.
The proof of what? Proof of what?
Well, so this refers to the, okay, the construction. Okay, so.
Proof of what? That there is logarithmic singularity or proof of what?
No, no. Okay.
What's the statement?
Okay, you replace proof by the construction.
Okay, in the text. Okay.
Okay.
So. Constructions of what?
Okay, so what you get is that you can construct projections, and we like to prove that their non-creative residue are so either CR invariant or contact invariant.
Okay.
So in this case, the proof uses the invariance by Heisenberg diffeomorphism of the non-creative residue, and the following two lemmas. So I start with the second one, which is not surprising, is that if you have two projections, the CHO projection, if P1 and P2 have homotopic principal symbols, then the non-commutative residue are the same. And second result is that if so this use analysis, and this is purely algebraic, is that if P1 and P2 have either same kernel or same image, then they have same non-commutative residue. And the reason is that if we have same image, then they are both conjugate to the orthogonal projection onto their image, okay? And so they are conjugate, and therefore, since the non-creative residue trace, they have same non-creative residue. Okay, well, maybe it's too fast. So we can forget about first remark. So in case of one is strictly pseudo-convex, so reason why it's more computable is that in principle, we want to compute the non-creative residue of I want to compute the non-creative residue, and the density which gives the non-creative residue is given by the integral of the symbol of degree minus dimension of m plus 1. Okay. So as the dimension grows, you get more and more terms to compute, and it's not it makes computation very difficult to get the general formula. But something you can do is to make use of a Gester scanning, and this simplifies considerably the computation. Okay. So it reduces to compute the second subleading symbols, which is simpler than to have to compute the symbol of order minus dimension of m plus 1. But of course, this symbol will respect to filtration, to refinement of the refinement of the Heisenberg filtration by means of the Gessler scanning. Okay. And I think it's also related to proving analog of Hesburgh-Riemann-Röhm formula, which is this. So this corresponds to the cohomology group of Cohen-Rossi complex, and we would like to have a geometric expression for that. And I think the problem of computing these densities, which correspond to supersymmetric non-creative residue, is related to that. Okay, so I'll explain some open problems. So I mentioned that the non-creative residue of CHDO projection is a homotopy invariant of its principal symbol. And as a result, you get additive maps from the K-theory of algebra of zero-order Heisenberg symbols to R. Okay, And the open problem is to compute this map. So you have two possible good outcomes. First one is that ROR can be computable in topological terms. And the second one is that ROR vanishes. So this is also good because this will allow us to define eta invariants. Okay. So we have two possibilities, which mean, there are two possible outcomes which are both good. Okay. And so one bad outcome is that we couldn't say anything about ROR. Okay. Okay, so I mentioned index 7. So in same way as the non-cative residue defines DMAP from K theory, the freedom indices of hypoeptic pseudo-differential operator induce an additive analytic index map. Okay, so from K theory of zero order symbols to Z. Okay, so I forgot to mention that the algebra of zero order symbols is non-commutative. So here you really have to use the K theory of algebra. Okay. So open problem is to identify analytic index with topological index and gives topological interpretation. And this problem is with the reformulation of the Singer index theorem for the Heisenberg calculus. So there is a student of, former student of Natural Dixon, Eric Bronner, which proves that, that for a differential operator, you can actually compute the index by using the classical Singer index theorem. But what we like to do is to have to carry through the Heisenberg analysis and to get an identity between analytic index defined by a Friedman indices of elliptic pseudo and a topological index, which has yet to be formed. Okay. And so mention about thing about okay, local index formula. So since the local index, you can try to construct hypoelliptic spectral triple, which will allow us to get index formula. And in fact, you can construct so three type of so maybe it's only two, in fact. Okay. Because I'm not 100% of the last one. We have three hypoelliptic event spectral triple. So there are a form C infinity of M, L2 of M, lambda, and D, where D is a sub-bundle of horizontal form, so which depends on the context, okay? But each time, D is given by the equation D modulus of D is equal to Q, where Q is hypoelliptic second-order signature operator. The construction is similar to the construction of Cohen-Moscovici for transverse elliptic operator and what spoke about Henri yesterday. So we have one which comes from the Barbie complex on CR manifold. Okay, here we need an addition real structure, another from contact complex, and another one from DB operator. And the open problem is to compute the corresponding CM cocycle. So I will explain for the DB operator. So I introduced the DB operator previously. And if you like, so you have QB, which is D bar B star, D bar B, D bar B, D bar B star, okay? So it's a second order signature operator, okay, because it's commute with some odd operator, or horizontal odd operator. And also one advantage of this is that it preserves the degree of form. So since the hypoelliptic depends on the degree of form, you can restrict your operator on some form. So you can exclude some degree, so that you get a hypoelliptic spectral triple. So in a sense, it's that allows to get hypoelliptic spectral triple, but this might not get yield an invertible K homology class. So, in case of 1 and 3, you have to make the restriction about the degree of form, but not in the case of 2. Okay? But for 1, okay? Furthermore, for the computation, you can expect that, for 1, the restriction is very bad. Okay. But except in dimension 3. So for 1 and 3, it might be possible to use Gessler scaling technique. But for 2, that seems difficult because even for contact complex, we don't have a good fundamental solution in case of the Heisenberg group. So the idea will rather be to use off-cyclic cohomology. Mm-hmm. But that's what you should see. Well, can we just stop here?